This is episode 67 of the Beyond the Food Show, and today we're talking to Dr. Amy Johnson about how to break up from our bad habits. My name is Stephanie Dozier, and I'm a clinical nutritionist, and at 35, I was trapped with severe anxiety, panic attack, obesity, and my health completely collapse. I needed solution and the journey began. Each episode of the Beyond the Food Show, we bring you an expert or a message to help you achieve your health goal, unlock your self-confidence, and live a better life. This episode of the Beyond the Food Show is brought to you by StephanieDozier.com. And today, our guest is Dr. Amy Johnson, a psychologist and the author of The Little Book of Big Change. You're going to like this. The No Willpower Approach to Breaking Any Habits. And I've been following the work of Dr. Johnson for a number of years. And this most recent book, I love it. I read it and I knew I had to bring her onto the show because she's in full alignment to the No Willpower Approach. For me, it's about craving, but for her, it's about any habits. And her concept of habits, my friends, is totally different than anything you have seen or heard before. And I think she will help you tremendously. So stay tuned for the full interview. You can also access the show note at stephaniedozier.com/067 and get more information about today's episode. So are you ready to ditch your bad habits and gain some new good and healthy habits? Let's do this. Hi, Dr. Amy. How are you?
I'm great, Stephanie. Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure, actually, to have you on the show because I have been following your work for about 2 years now. And when you posted, I think it's a few months ago or 3 or 4 months ago, we talked about your new book that said The No Willpower Approach to Breaking Any Habits. You got me hooked. I had to have you on the show.
Yeah, it's a different approach for sure.
Well, it's in alignment with what I teach because we talk about food craving and I say that the willpower approach will actually not work. So when I read your book, I was mind blown and your approach is so simple and profound. And I believe that it has the power to help a lot of our listener, particularly coming out of the Crave Cure series where we really spent a lot of time understanding why we crave. Now it's about tools to help us change those habits. And the word habits is key because many, many of us have habits that lead us to not make the right food choices. So in the context of all your work and your book, give me your definition of habits. What is a habit for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think of habits not in terms of the way they show up in the world. So what you eat, what you think, what you buy, drink, you know, whatever people's habits are, but more like a layer deeper than that. So habits to me are the habitual thinking that we take seriously, because that I think is what's behind every single habit. Anything we ever do in the world is a thought that shows up in our heads that we take as truth and we act on.
And there's not good or bad habits. It's just thoughts that show up in our head.
Exactly. Like everything we do on some level makes sense, given the thinking that we're taking seriously. You know, the habit itself is just our best attempt. It's just what we do based on what we're thinking and believing in that moment.
And that is key. So for people, you may want to go back to episode 63, because Dr. Amy, we had the opportunity to talk to Dr. Bruce Lipton, which I'm sure you know his work.
Yes.
About the subconscious mind and how a lot of the chatter that goes on in our head every day actually comes from our subconscious mind. And we're not conscious of those thoughts and they just happen, those thoughts. So is that where you're saying our habits are driven from?
Exactly. And I love, you know, the subconscious piece of that, because you're right. I say thoughts and I just kind of take that for granted at this point. But sometimes, you know, it's really easy to hear that and say, oh, well, I didn't think anything that led me to go eat that donut, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like, well, you did, you just weren't aware of that, because we're not, you know, we're not talking about thoughts in terms of just sentences and words in our head that we can pick out. It's everything. It's so much of it is subconscious and it's just within us and it's driving everything we do.
And it's the chatter we often don't know we're having until we catch ourselves not being in the moment. And when we catch ourselves in the moment, we realize, and that happens to me a lot, oh my God, I was thinking about this and I had those negative thoughts in my head.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. We're not aware of it until we notice that we feel horrible or until we notice that we're eating something or doing something. Yeah, that's so true. But, you know, even when you can't go back and notice what you were thinking, because again, a lot of times you can't, it's enough to just kind of see, like at some point we notice how we're feeling or what we're doing and we wake up to it and we can know that there's thought driving that 100% of the time.
And it's not voluntary thoughts, like you said about the donut, right? It's not us being a quote unquote bad person thinking about wanting a donut. It's something that happens without us really having a conscious control over those thoughts that then creates the habits.
Yeah, I think that is such a huge, important point. And personally, for me, like that has brought me so much freedom, and I've seen it for others, is kind of this idea that you're pointing to there, which is that, like, yeah, we're the thinker in that the thoughts come up within us. It's the neurons in our brain. It's our head doing it, but we're not consciously doing it. And I think there's something so cool about seeing, like, thought is showing up within us. That's the way I think about it, talk about it. Thought shows up. We don't make it happen. That means we shouldn't be, or we don't need to be blaming ourselves for it. We don't need to be taking it personally, judging ourselves for it. It's just what shows up. And there's so much power in starting to see it that way. Because now it's like, oh, I'm just a human being like everyone else. This energy that takes form as thought kind of moves through me, shows up. But when you kind of get a feel for that, you know, you're naturally put almost in more of an observer standpoint. So you aren't quite as caught up. It doesn't feel so big and personal.
And as we all, most of the listeners are women, we're good at blaming ourselves and putting bad labels on us being a bad person. And that's very important to understand. And that definition of habit does not mean that although you have the thoughts, you're not a bad person from having it. It's just something that you're not yet conscious of.
Exactly. Exactly. And we can tell women, we do, you know, all the time, or men or women, you know, oh, it's not your fault. Don't blame yourself. That only makes it worse. But I think really seeing this, you know, having an insight and seeing, oh my gosh, I don't put those thoughts there. They really do just show up. That helps so much in us just naturally not blaming ourselves so much.
So in that train of thoughts about habits, you actually define two kinds of habits in your book. Can you go through them for the benefit of the listener?
Yeah, you might have to remind me. So was I talking about kind of more thought habits and behavioral habits, or is that what you're talking about?
Yes, exactly. Okay. So for the engineer, we're just going to go back to me asking the question.
Okay.
Does that help you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So again, I really kind of think of it as one big habit, but there do tend to be, you know, the way they show up in the world. There's, I see anxiety as a habit. I see depression and bad moods as a habit, insecurity as a habit. Those are more thought habits. So those are things that's like, it's habitual thought. Again, just showing up. We don't put it there. We might believe it because we're used to hearing it in our own heads and our voice, but we don't put it there. And there's so much in just seeing that it shows up. So there's habitual habits like that, thought habits that we get caught up in and we feel a certain way and we take that seriously. And then, and it's really not, it's just an extension on that. Then there tend to be more behavioral habits. So sometimes we have thoughts about feeling insecure or anxious or uncomfortable. And we learn to cope with that thinking and those feelings by eating or drinking or shopping or working or whatever it is people do. So in a sense, it is too, but in a sense, it's almost like everything's a thought that we take seriously. That's all of our habits. And sometimes we take that extra step to try to cope with our thoughts or, you know, feel better. And then we add on behaviors, which obviously just make things a lot harder for us in the world.
Yeah, you talk about in the book, and I think that's very important for people to understand about the behavioral habits. They're there for a reason, a valid reason to make us feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the best we can see. Like when I was caught in my binge eating habit, I felt horrible, as you know, everybody here can relate to in some way or another, just so overwhelmed and fighting with myself and I knew better and just all of that garbage. And eating a bunch of food helped. Now, I'm not saying it was a good solution. It was a horrible solution. It caused a lot more problems, you know, later. But from that thinking, from that state of mind and all that emotion there and all that insecurity that felt so personal and like I was a big loser and all of that, it was the best I could see to do to just shove a bunch of food in me to numb that a little bit. And I think that's so big to see that we're all doing the best we can in that regard. From what we see, we're all just trying to feel better. Everything we do is an attempt to feel better.
And that is comforting to hear, because in the health and fitness industry, and what most people are exposed to is that that's a bad behavior and you're a bad person for having this habit. So taking this compassionate approach that you're teaching in the book to habits, A, makes us feel better. And then B, if you understand the concept we just explained, you will have less of those behavioral habits because you won't feel as bad.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So you talked about your story a little bit, and if you don't mind deep diving into it, but you have a story of binge eating, and that's where this concept of how you teach people how to change their habit comes from. And it's a story of eating disorder, particularly binge eating, as you referred to, and bulimia, I guess. And you did try the whole willpower and traditional approach, and that wasn't so successful for you.
No, I tried that for a long time, and that pretty much made things worse. But again, it was the best I could see. So yeah, I had a lot of anxiety in my younger years. And so now, again, just based on what we're saying here, I can see that as kind of connected. Just a lot of, I don't know, yeah, just kind of a low level anxiety. And so I did different things to try to cope with that. I smoked for a while, and then I quit smoking, and then I was worried about gaining weight. And so I started to diet, and then I started to binge eat. And so the binge eating habit, yeah, I mean, that was a huge thing for me. It was for the better part of 8 years. And it really, you know, I really felt out of control. I just felt like a drug addict that you see on like some, you know, Lifetime TV special, where I would not be able to see straight. Like when I would be kind of, when the way it felt to me is kind of like overwhelmed, overcome with these urges to binge. I mean, all reason, everything went out the window. And I just felt like I had no other choice but to give in to that craving and that urge. And yet I knew better. And I can see in hindsight, you know, my common sense and my wisdom were there trying to show me other ways. But I was really caught up in it. And I tried everything, lots of willpower, lots of, I'm never going to eat this again, lots of things like hypnosis and acupuncture. I mean, everything you can imagine, therapy, everything you can imagine. And nothing really, like some things helped temporarily, but it always felt like this habit was such a part of me that it was going to come find me. You know, I never really slept easily, like thinking, oh, okay, I think I'm done. I never felt like I had turned that corner. I felt like, okay, I'm coping. If I keep going to these OA meetings, I can cope. If I keep eating this way, I can cope and maybe hold it away. But it definitely wasn't freedom. And that's why I'm so passionate now about helping people find freedom, where you just, it just looks different. So you're not left coping forever.
And I think that's a very important point, because there's a view on habits such as binge eating or even alcoholism or overeating that it's an addiction. And it's a disease that you are stuck with, and even sugar craving to a certain extent. And that's something that I've disagreed with. And you talk about it in your book. It's not an addiction. It's just a result of your thoughts. So what's your definition of addiction in the context of your book here?
You know, I kind of use the terms interchangeably. I mean, I really use the term habit because I think, yeah, addiction has so many connotations. Like you said, that there's some real physical addiction. And there's no question, when I was binge eating, like there was a real physical pull to keep binge eating. So I suppose you could say that's an addiction. But the whole idea of this being a disease, or that people having an allergy kind of, you know, to alcohol or sugar or whatever that is, I don't know, but I have just seen so many people be free of that. I've seen people, you know, huge binge eating issues. And it would be so easy to point to that and say, wow, clearly there's a sugar addiction. But then I see them find complete freedom. So what happened to the addiction? So that's why, to me, it just doesn't make sense to use that terminology. I just think of it as a habit. And we all know that habits can change.
And it's much more empowering to think of it as a habit that you can change versus an addiction that's a disease that you're stuck with for the rest of your life.
Yeah, totally. And I know you feel the same way. Like there, I just could never say that somebody stuck with this because I've seen way too many times, including in my own life, you know, that it's just not necessarily the case.
And I think that's where for the listener today, this might be a completely different perspective on habits or addiction that you have never been previewed to, but it's freeing. To your point, that's freedom because it allows you a possibility of changing the outcome and changing your habits. And for that, I'm going to dive into the next point. You have to actually change your perspective. Yes, there is a science part to habits, but there's also the spiritual aspect. And that's what I like about your book, because you connect both the spiritual aspect of habits, but also the science piece of it. Now, you talk about neuroplasticity as being this sciencey aspect of habits. And so let's explain to the listener a little bit about neuroplasticity and how that relates to changing our habits.
Yeah, I think, you know, in really basic terms, and I think most people are somewhat familiar with this at this point, but it's just kind of seeing that we innocently, through our behavior, through our thinking that we take seriously, we kind of get our brains habituated to things. You know, like if you have a thought, like for me, I had a thought about eating a bunch of sugary food and I acted on that thought very often, my brain's going to say, hey, last time you did this, you felt better for a minute. Let's do that again. You know, so kind of that simple. But the cool thing about it is that it works in reverse, is that, you know, what that also shows us, and again, not that you go about this by willpower and discipline or anything like that, but that as we stop, as we kind of come to see our thinking and our feelings and maybe want all that sugary food, but you don't act on that, your brain goes the other way. And that's a really wonderful thing. It's crazy. Even like in our lifetime, I mean, recently in our adulthood, probably, people were still thinking that the brain couldn't really change. It's only been in the past, blows my mind, you know, like maybe 20 years, 25 years that we've really started to see just how malleable and plastic, you know, the brain is. And so it's a really empowering thing.
Yeah. And that's the science piece. Like scientifically, we've demonstrated that you can imagine groove in a river, right? I had a previous guest, Susan Pierce Thompson, who explained like the hold habits are like a groove of a bed in a river. Mm-hmm. And you can actually groove a new bed for your river, for your new habits in your head with that aspect of neuroplasticity. So it does show that we can change our habit. We're not stuck with that disease and that habit. We can actually implement a new one in our life. So how do you go about helping someone change their habit? Like, what is the process for you?
Yeah. So this is where the spiritual piece comes in, because here's what I hear. Now, I love the science and I love like what you just shared. I mean, it's so true. And there's so much hope and freedom in that our brain is not fixed and nothing about our lives is fixed. Even our physical body, you know, they say our cells regenerate every 8 years or something. I don't know how accurate that is, but I mean, nothing is fixed in human life. We're constantly evolving, which is awesome. So what I hear a lot of people say is like, all right, I get how neuroplasticity works in at least a really basic way. So I need to rewire my brain, you know, and they kind of go out and that's so innocent. And, you know, our brains do rewire. But we tend to sometimes kind of take that upon ourselves. And then that becomes almost like, again, willpower, discipline. Here's the strategy. Here's what I'm going to make myself think, you know, and think back to what we said, you know, 15 minutes ago about how thought isn't ours. Mm-hmm. It's not personal. We aren't putting it there. Yes, we have free will to some extent. So we could sit here and decide to think about green tea or a maple tree or whatever we might want to think about. But even if I said, all right, you know, listener, think about green tea for the next 24 hours and I'll give you $1 million, you couldn't do it. You can't make your mind stay somewhere, you know, like, so our free will or our control, let's use that word, is very limited. So what breaking habits is to me, like how this comes to be and how we find so much freedom, is just really understanding, having a deep, insightful understanding of how our mind works, of the fact that we are healthy. Like, just again, if this is new for you, if you're listening and you're not sure about that, just, you know, just what if? What if it's right? What if your brain is perfect? You're perfectly healthy. Any habits you have are very surface level and, you know, easy to change. And so we're very resilient. We have innate health, mental health, and we think a lot and we get in those thinking groups, right? Mm-hmm. So when thought comes up, we tend to take that thought seriously. We think it's true. We think it's us thinking it. We think it's personal. And so obviously when we see thought that way, we're going to act on it. We're like, it's going to have a whole different set of implications. You know, we're going to, like we were saying, we're going to judge ourselves and feel bad and all of it and feel stuck and all this kind of stuff. But when people start to see, wait a minute, what if I'm perfectly mentally healthy and this thought that shows up isn't even mine? It's just energy moving through me, taking shape in kind of habitual ways, but I don't have to do anything about it. It comes and goes like the weather. It'll come up, show up. I can have a huge craving. I can feel some discomfort, and that will change on its own. Then we start to relax. And when we start to relax, everything goes more smoothly. So we really do start to have that habitual thought about the donuts or whatever. And it's like, oh, that again. Rather than you start shaking and like, oh my gosh, I need to find my donut. I feel horrible. It's like, you know, that's kind of extreme, but it's like, it becomes, oh, that thinking showing up. It's not even yours. You don't care about a donut. That's the groove in your brain that's playing out. So it's really like, to me, that's where that spiritual side coupled with the science is just amazing and so helpful, because we just come to have peace around being a human being without trying to control it, shape it, anything. And when we feel more peace about our human experience and we're relaxed and feel safe in our human experience, things naturally just flow through us. And you truly do see habits kind of falling away, because that's kind of what wants to happen.
It's brilliant. I have so many questions. So let's talk about urges. I express urges for craving as a wave. It comes up, it peaks, but it goes down as well. Is that how you see urges?
I mean, I see urges as any other thought. So okay. It definitely does, you know, seem to take that shape sometimes when we're looking at it. It comes up, we feel it brought to life, and then it changes. So yeah, I'd say that's kind of true. But I guess just when I talk about it, I just to kind of make urges and cravings not this big, scary, separate thing. I just kind of see it as any other thought. And you're right. That's how most thought feels like it kind of happens.
The point is, it will pass.
Yeah, exactly.
And you don't have to act on it to make it go away.
Exactly. It is like a weather system. It will come through. It will create a little ruckus. You're going to feel whatever you feel from it. But we know, for the most part, the weather is safe. When it gets a little cloudy and there's a little drizzle, we don't freak out. We just like, oh, I think I'll stay in right now and let it pass. And right, the more we can see our thoughts and feelings and cravings and all of that in that way, oh my gosh, I mean, it really does pass faster because we're not kind of in the way resisting it and fearing it.
So that's what you describe as intellectual knowledge versus insight and the power of insight in the process of changing our habits. Am I correct?
Yeah. So exactly. So what we're talking about, I think we could hear that at an information level, you know, you can like, it's not a hard concept, right? Everybody gets that like, oh, okay, my feelings are like the weather, but that, you know, to really have an insight and really see how safe we are in that, that's kind of a different story. And that's what's helpful. So the information and concepts alone don't do much, but that's why for everyone listening, I mean, it's really great to just kind of sit with this, really take it in and ask yourself, don't take my word for it or Stephanie's word for it. Like, ask yourself, like, is that really how it goes? And, you know, look at your own experience, because that's what opens you up to have your own personal kind of relationship with that.
And insight is like what I call a ha-ha moment.
Yeah.
It's when your brain actually feels it and gets it. It's no longer a concept that you have to remember that's what it is. You actually live it at every moment of your life.
Exactly. Life looks like whatever you have that insight about, it just looks different after that, you know, and that's, again, that's why change can be so deep and lasting and permanent, because we have insights. It isn't like, for me, my change forever mm-hmm. was just coping. Oh, I got to push this away. I got to do all the right things to hold this at bay. That's not insight. That was just me working some steps, you know, that maybe kept me abstinent, but I wasn't free. So this is where, through insight, is where we can have deep, really deep permanent change.
And you talk about that in your own story where you say, I can't pinpoint exactly when the habit of binge eating left me, but I know that's when I had an insight on it. Like, you can't say that's the day that I no longer binge.
Yeah. And it was a series of insights, and it is for a lot of people. And it's insights. It is kind of like that aha moment. And sometimes they're huge. Sometimes, you know, I'm guessing, just because I talk about this stuff a lot, even people listening right now are having insights. And yes. Probably some people are like, oh my gosh, like, this blows my mind. I never thought of it this way. And maybe others aren't having that big extreme experience, but they're still hearing something, you know? So yeah. Insight can take so many different forms.
And that's the whole purpose of the podcast, like going beyond the food, our concept, like today we're talking about habits that we don't necessarily regularly hear about, or a version of it, of going beyond the food that we're not familiar with, but you're going to hear it here. You're going to read a book in 2 weeks or in 3 years from now. And that's when the insight of the haha moment will go up in your head. It's like, oh my God, I just get it now.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
So for you, in the way you teach about habits, is the power of insight. So you give the intellectual knowledge, but then the patient or the individual needs to reach that state of having the insight about their own habits.
Yes.
And that's when the habit change occur without having to work for it so hard.
Yep, exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about self-sabotage, because that's another big topic around here, where people will go into this process of working at changing their habits and their behavior, and then they struggle with the concept of sabotaging their own effort. But you have a completely different perspective on self-sabotage.
Yeah, I don't really believe in it. I mean, I know, you know, it certainly looks that way. Okay. Like, me too. It certainly looks like we have a little change, we get some positive results, and then we know better and we go in and kind of do something counter. So for me, you know, like being abstinent from binging for a couple weeks, maybe that felt awesome, even though I wasn't free. It was like, okay, I haven't done this in so long. And then I have an urge to binge and I act on it, and it totally looks like self-sabotage, because the whole time I'm thinking, what am I doing? I just had 2 weeks without doing this, you know? So I think it's so easy to see why we call it that. But the reason I don't like that is because, again, we're doing the best we can from what we see in that moment. And, you know, human beings, we have so much thinking, and we've been taking our thinking seriously our whole life. So of course we're going to get caught up in stuff. So there are lots of moments when we know better. I mean, most, almost every moment we know better. We all know intellectually what we want to do and what's healthy and how we want to be behaving, but we don't always act that way. And not because we're sabotaging ourselves, or we secretly don't have enough self-love, or, you know, some of these theories that are really bad sounding that people come up with. I don't think it's any of that. I think it's just in that very moment, we just don't feel good. Like, I know for me, like in that moment, I just was feeling an urge so much. And then I was probably beating myself up for having another urge. And what are you going to do? Are you going to, you know, go backwards and all that pressure? And it just was too much. And I wasn't seeing in that moment that this feeling is all made up in my own head and that it will pass. You know, I wasn't seeing that as just my own thinking playing out that I didn't have to get caught up in. I was caught up, so I acted on it. And I think that's just how it goes for everybody, you know? And it's, again, kind of like the addiction conversation. Like, it's so much kinder to you know, just hold it as a what if. Like, what if that's true? What if you've never self-sabotaged? You're just doing the best you can. And like every human, you don't always see things clearly. None of us do.
And in some way, we can say it's a misguided attempt to self-love.
Yeah, we're just trying to get back home. I think everything we do is trying to get back home, you know, whatever home is for you, but it's mm-hmm. a peaceful place. And sometimes the best we can see is to just do that habit and hurry up and get all this pain over with, you know, and it's just the best we can see at times.
What would be your advice with people that are in the process of changing their habits and they have this moment where they go back to their habits that they're trying to change? I don't like the word breaking, but changing. And they have a moment of quote unquote relapse. What's the most constructive way of seeing that?
Well, first, I think I'm lucky and probably you as well, like get to talk to so many people in this situation where to me, that does not even begin to faze me. I just know, and I'm not exaggerating, it is like watching a baby try to learn to walk and the baby falls. I get just about as freaked out hearing that someone relapsed as I would watching a one-year-old try to walk and stumble. Like, of course, you know, it's part of the process so often. And it's meaningless. Like we were saying, we have those grooves in our brain. Of course, if you've been doing anything for a certain amount of time, there's going to be some momentum behind that. Mm-hmm. Your brain and that energy that shows up as thought is very, very likely going to head back in that direction and try to get you to feel good by doing that again. And it's a great chance because you're human. You're going to maybe get caught up in that once or twice more or 20 times more. So to me, it's just totally part of the process of change. And it's interesting because you see so many people, you know, take that so seriously. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you can just say, okay, well, that was a bad moment. That was a moment where I got caught up in thought, starting over, you know, refresh, fresh start. And that's it. It's like it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. But what we innocently do is we give it so much meaning, you know, again, I think because of so much you're on the wagon or off the wagon and you're counting days and all this mentality gets us thinking we're a failure if we mess up once. And then we kind of live that out because we think we're a failure all of a sudden or that it's not going to work for us.
I think one of the biggest, I want to say not disease, but problem behind self-sabotage is actually perfection.
Yeah.
And our attempt for perfection. And not seeing that this self-sabotage behavior is actually part of the learning process of whatever you're trying to do at the moment. And trying to aim for perfection will actually cause you to have more quote-unquote self-sabotage moment. Would you agree with that?
Totally, totally. And perfection, you know, I mean, that's just a thought too. It's mm-hmm. it's a thought that says, hey, here's how I should be. Here's how life should look. And, you know, it just isn't accurate. There's not a problem with the fact that we have a setback. The problem, if anything, is in our idea about perfection, just like you're saying. Yeah.
So if somebody wants to change their habits, the very first thing you say in your book is first, you need to truly want to change.
Yeah. You know, I think you have to be open to seeing things in a new way. Okay. Like that's, yeah, you have to see that if someone can say, what if I'm wrong about how I'm seeing my experience? Maybe that's even too much. It's not wrong, but it's like, what if there's another side to this or like a bigger picture to see? I think that's huge, a huge first step.
So do you see a lot of people coming into your program and working with you who think they want to change, but they're not really ready for it?
Well, I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, I think people are ready. I just think sometimes it is kind of tougher to let go of all the, like our ideas about things, you know? So mm-hmm. often people come in and they're convinced that what they need is a food plan. Yeah. Or what they need is to rewire their brain and to do 5 things every morning and like set a new habit in place or whatever, you know? And so, you know, the thing is, like, I definitely know that a food plan and 5 habits and all of that stuff isn't the answer across the board for all people. But if someone comes in and they're convinced that that's what's helpful for them, well, you know, they know themselves better than I can. So, but I say, like, we have to hold that stuff loosely. We have to hold everything loosely and just look in this direction of our experience. And when we do that, when we see more about where our experience comes from and how thought moves through us and it's not ours and all of that, like things really just start to shift. And yeah, so sometimes people are a little wedded to what they've heard before, and that kind of holds them back for a little bit.
And let's talk about the concept of ego, because in the previous podcast with Sean Croxton, we talked about the concept of ego and how it prevents us sometimes to move forward. Do you talk about, or do you agree with this whole concept of the ego preventing us and being that voice that sometimes will not want to hear this new information?
Yeah, it's not, ego is not a word that I use all the time every day or like talk about a lot, but I think it is, you know, I think the basic idea is exactly what we were just talking about. Yeah. It's like, I know what's best. I, you know, like this is what I've read or what I've heard, or, and anything we cling to has the potential to just get in our way, you know, like life shows us things and we have to be awake and open and being able to hear that and see that. So yeah, when we're really caught up in our ego, our ideas and, you know, the all the I stuff, it definitely gets in the way.
The reason why I bring this concept of ego is because a lot of the topic we bring forward in the podcast is brand new information that you don't hear in mass media, such as your concept of habit here. And many people get scared. They get their back up. They're like, this is not true. That can't be. That's not what I hear everywhere. And that voice that prevents you from absorbing this information, if that's your case today, is actually that part of you that doesn't want you to change.
Yes, exactly. Or that part of you that, right, that is just really rigid. It's just a thought. I think it's just thought, you know, yeah. It's just a lot of thought that we're really clinging to. And yeah, I think that's absolutely right.
So if you're hearing that voice today, just let it go and absorb the information. And that might be what you're hearing today from Dr. Amy, the concept that you need to understand to change that habit that you've been struggling with. Now, you talk about in your book towards the end, your challenge with infertility and how your viewpoint on that challenge in your life really allow you to move forward in that. Can you talk a little bit about that and share that experience with people listening?
Yeah. So it was posed to me by a wise person in my life. Like, how could this actually, when I was going through infertility issues, you know, like what good could come of this? It was so hard to see. And sometimes that whole idea of that, you know, you're in a struggle, of course you're not going to be able to see any good. And sometimes it's just annoying. And I, you know, and sometimes it's almost like I wouldn't just go up to someone who's majorly suffering with something and say, oh, well, let's look on the bright side, you know, and that's not what it's about. But it was like, when I was asked that, what I took from that is like, well, I can't see a thing. From that, in the middle of that struggle, I couldn't see. It was so hard. I thought she was insane. I couldn't even understand what she was saying.
And for the listener to understand, it's 18 months of you trying and 18 negative pregnancy tests in a row.
Yeah. So it was a good chunk of time. And it was
a big issue for you.
It was a really hard time for me. Yeah, it really was. So it was like, what do you mean good to come from? Like, I couldn't even understand her words barely. But what I think is valuable and that is kind of seeing as time went on, it became hugely clear what was good. And there was a lot of good. Now, does that mean, you know, I should have been able to see it in the middle of it? No. When we're in the middle of a struggle, we can't see what's good. And that's okay. That's normal. But it's really cool, I think, for listeners too, to be able to look and see, well, what things, you know, have you felt that way about in the past? And maybe 6 months, 6 years, you know, 60 years, who knows, sometime later, you see something, you see it differently. You know, you see some help in it. You see some goodness in it. And not to like stretch ourselves to like have to find it again when we're in the pain. But I think what it does is it really helps us to see that when we're caught up in any kind of struggle, we are caught up in thinking and we are just seeing it the way we're seeing it. But that's not the way it is. It's just the way we're seeing it from all that thinking.
Because you had those repetitive thoughts, I guess, in your head that something was wrong with you and that's why you couldn't have children. So you were caught up in that thought process.
Yes. Yeah.
And the beauty in this story that I wanted to share with the listener is that a dear friend of yours in your life put a new thought in your head, which is to look into something positive coming out of that situation. And that thought that at the time you couldn't accept actually made its way through your brain and allowed you to change your perspective.
Yeah, totally. And I feel that way now about the binge eating and about so many other things, you know, like that really was sucked too in the middle of it. It was horrible. Yeah. I couldn't see anything good about it. And it took a while, you know, and now it looks different. And I just don't want it to sound so Pollyanna, like there's always some bright side, but exactly what you're pointing to is like, there are other ways of seeing things and life just shows us those. So no matter what people are going through, just kind of keep looking for other ways of seeing it and life will show you those in time.
Absolutely. And for me, I can say I ended up in hospital thinking that I was going to die of a heart attack. At that time, I couldn't see anything positive of it. And it probably took me 2 years for me to see something positive out of it. But here I am today. And all of that is because of that one moment.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's why I want to share with people that the power of that one new concept, that one new thought. So if today that can change maybe just 100 women with that concept that come in, let it be known that the struggle you're going through today, maybe something positive, I think will be something positive will come out of this at some point in your life. Just be open to that concept.
Totally. Yeah.
Now, what about creating a new habit? What's your perspective on that?
You know, I think, again, like it isn't something we need to force. I think because I see like our default kind of state as a really good, helpful one, I like to think of it as like when we kind of let life move through us, so let our thinking move through us and we're not all caught up in that ego stuff and we know and all that. And, you know, we're just letting it show up. Like healthy habits that are really aligned to what we want to be doing, they're going to crop up. And I'm not saying it's 100% effortless all the time. Like I have a healthy habit of going to yoga every day. And when my alarm goes off at 5:20 in the morning, it's not always effortless to get out of bed. But at this point, like I just know it's not really a thought. It's just something that kind of happens. So I didn't get to that healthy habit by setting a New Year's resolution and then working really hard and committing. And not that those are bad things at all, but I'm just, you know, it's just kind of seeing that what if our natural human wiring is such that it's going to promote healthy habits? And if we can see this as less about hard work and willpower and discipline and more about just understanding how nature works through us and getting out of the way a little bit, which we do when we understand, you know, like healthy habits that you don't even think that you want are going to show up for you.
So understanding the intellectual aspect of new habits is really important, but let your mind, your body, time give you that insight and then buy into that habitual habits, that healthy habit, like you going to yoga every day, it will come because it's a good thing for you. Is that how you could sum it up?
Yeah. And I think there's probably a lot of people thinking like, oh, well, what I need is to go to yoga or run a marathon or, you know, eat more vegetables or whatever. And those are all wonderful things. But that you kind of want to see where it's a thought, like an idea or a concept about what you think you need versus, which is, again, back to that kind of ego, like that's our personal thinking coming up, wanting to take over versus letting something that wants to happen. It's just a little shift on it, but I love it. Like letting something that wants to come through us, come through us.
So that is a beautiful concept because it's empowering. It's not forcing us into a space where we don't feel comfortable yet, but giving us the time to acquire this habit because that's what our whole body, our whole mind wants to be and the place where it wants to create that health or that good behavior.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. How would people go about beyond reading your book, which by the way, the book link will be in the show note at stephaniedoze.com/067. So for everyone, we can go there and get the book. However, what else could people do if they want to get more into changing their habit with you?
Yeah. So if you go to my website, which is just dramyjohnson.com, you can sign up for my mailing list there. And I write a new article or put out a new video every single week. So every Thursday, I have something brand new that's around this, you know, this understanding or finding freedom or something on that. So that's probably the first and best thing to do is sign up there. And then I also have an online school called the Little School of Big Change, which is a community full of content and resources that helps people see, you know, what we've been talking about here in this conversation. And there's a wonderful community attached to that. So you can see more about that at thelittleschoolofbigchange.com.
That's amazing. So I encourage people to go get the book. It's a quick and easy read. Like I literally read it in one sitting. I couldn't put it down. So go get that. That's definitely get started. And then go check out the work of Dr. Amy on her website. Thank you so much, Dr. Amy, for being with us and have taught us this brand new concept on habits, which I know is going to change hundreds and hundreds of people's life today. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It was great talking with you.
There you have it. I hope you've enjoyed it. And I'm so glad you stuck around till the end of the show. Now, if you did learn or enjoy the show, a few things you can do to help me share this message. You can share the episode straight up from the device you're listening to someone who need to hear this message or somebody that would benefit from hearing this new concept of habits in their own life. You can also go to the show notes, not only to get the link of what me and Amy talked about in the show, but also share it via Facebook or Instagram and tag me or Dr. Amy Johnson and let us know what you thought of the way we talked about the concept of habits. You can also leave me a review at stephaniedozier.com/review and let me know how I'm doing and how the show is helping you. Because I'm talking alone to a mic right now, so hearing from you will mean a lot to me and actually will give me fuel to continue my work. Now, we've got some great show coming up for you. Show 69 will be with Devin Sisson, and we're going to actually dive into the concept of intuitive eating. We've never talked about that thus far in the podcast, and this is going to be something that will help you move forward in your journey. And Thursday's episode 068 will be about consistency. That's going to be part of the coaching series of podcasts, shorter podcasts, and very intense about one topic of coaching. Again, I'm so glad that you were here with me and Dr. Amy Johnson on the show today. Thank you very much, and we'll see you on the next episode.